everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast. Myself, Judgy, joined by Jay from JSGC podcast.
Hello.
Jay, thanks for joining us, mate.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me on once more. Much appreciated.
No, we appreciate your time and your input. So, again, for anyone who's seen these shows for the first time, this is our opposition preview where we bring on a fan or a podcast, as it may be, from the opposition. Try and get a little bit of an insight into what we should expect. I mean, I know what to expect when we go to the Etihad, particularly these days, unfortunately. But yeah, obviously get a little bit more of a fan perspective of how the opposition are getting on, what we can maybe expect, and then obviously preview the game and finally get a prediction. So first and foremost, Jay, again, welcome to the show. And yeah, I think from my point of view, obviously it's always a tough trip for anyone going to the Etihad, particularly in recent years. And I'd probably say go as far as back to 10 years that we found it particularly difficult. I think The last time we had a bit of a spell was in the Tim Cahill era when we bagged a couple of 1-0s. But since then, it's been extremely
You always seem
difficult.
To be our bogey team under Tim Cahill as well, yeah.
we did, yeah, when we had Cahill and Fellaini. We caused a few more problems. But anyway, just over to you first of all. I think the first thing I want to say, Jay, is, you know, you come into this season once again as favourite to the Premier League, once again as favourite to the Champions League, rightfully so, by the way, on recent performances. But how's this season so far stacked up against expectations?
It's just starting from City's perspective now, just to fall into place. And over the last 3 seasons that we've won the Premier League under Pep Guardiola, bar a game or two here or there, Manchester City just always seem to do the same thing, which is you ask Manchester City to go out and your last 13, 14 games of the season, go out and win as many of them games as possible. Sometimes we've been here before where a couple of times we've had to win 10, 11 games in a row at the business end of the season to be able to fend off competition to win the Premier League. And it's looking like, potentially, the same might be needed here. And it's always been about getting to this point in the season and just making sure that we are within touching distance of where we want to be. And nobody's really ran away from City. And you do, and I'm trying to speak about it from an unbiased perspective, but you look at it and you just fancy that City have been here, done that, worn the T-shirt. They're going to take some stopping from Arsenal, from Liverpool. They're going to take confidence from the fact that they've still got to play City. But just going off what City have done over the last 3 seasons, City have been here, we know what we need to do. And right now, everything just seems to be falling nicely into place. We're finding good form. We've won 11 out of our last 12 games in all competitions. We're unbeaten in them 12 games. Since we last played you guys, we've faced 7 games in all competitions and won every single one of them. So everything's just starting to fall nicely into place for City just at the right time, because I don't know if you've had a chance to look at our schedule, but in March, we've got a very difficult March at the moment. It's Manchester United at home and a Manchester derby. Then we've got a Champions League second leg last 16 clash against Copenhagen. We follow that at the weekend away at Anfield. We then follow that up the weekend after. If we're not in FA Cup action and Brighton aren't in FA Cup action, then it's Brighton away. We hit the international break and we come right back after the international break with a match against Arsenal at the Etihad. That March decides the Premier League as far as I'm concerned. So it's all about putting ourselves in the strongest position possible. And it's getting to a point where our form's just started to turn everything round, that Liverpool, when we faced them at Anfield, it looked like we may have to beat them at Anfield. Right now, how it is, it looks like it's going to be a do-not-lose game for us rather than a must-win. And that match against Arsenal at the end of March is massive as well. It had huge implications on the Premier League last season when we beat them at the Etihad. And if we can do the same here as well, City will take some stopping, in particular if we end up beating Arsenal and end up not losing to Liverpool.
Yeah, no, I think the greatest credit I could give you, and I did so on not only our podcast but other podcasts over the last couple of months, is how well you've dealt with, you know, being without Kevin De Bruyne, and as you said, you've stayed in touch during that period. Mm-hmm. Haaland's obviously been out for a period of time as well. hopefully for your sake, not for everyone else's, you know, they're going to stay fit now for the remainder of the season. How much of a boost is having, in particular, you know, KDB back and you know, Erling Haaland?
I mean, the quality of these players speaks for themselves. Mm. I'm excited to have a Kevin De Bruyne starting to find his feet, returning back to the City squad. I'm excited to have Haaland back in the squad as well, just at the right time. As I said before, everything just seems to be falling nicely into place, touch wood. But there's still so many games left of the season. Still, it's going to take De Bruyne and it's going to take Haaland a few more weeks, really, to get the ball in motion and get themselves back up to match speed. Because even now, Erling Haaland, to me, is not... He can do 90 minutes, but you're not going to get the very best out of Erling Haaland. And Kevin De Bruyne as well, he's just starting to find his feet nicely. But he's made a couple of really good cameo appearances from the bench. And we're in a lucky position right now that we've got no injuries to our squad, which is the first time this season we've had everybody available. And I don't know if you've been paying attention over the last week or so at City's squad, but now that we've got everybody back, competition for places, there's 16, 17 world-class players. One or two of them are starting to get a little upset that they're not getting game time. So Pep needs to manage this situation very carefully and very well, because it's been a very quiet January. We've played, what, 3-4 football games throughout 31 days. It's not what we've come to expect. There's normally a big, massive fixture pile-up throughout January, but it's been a very quiet January. And I think that's just helped put City into a good position. We've just started to get everybody back, which is good news for us. It's just started to upset a couple of the players, because we've got 16, 17 world-class players competing for places. There's only 11 places available for selection, and one or two players have just started to get a little bit upset about that. So how Pep's going to manage the squad over the coming weeks is going to be interesting, to say the least. Normally we just rotate, and we play what, every 3 to 4 days, but we've had a quiet January and it's been pretty quiet February as well, where we've been in a fortunate position to not be playing every 3 to 4 days, but playing every 6-7 days, and even a little winter break in there. So the City squad should be nice and refreshed, good to go, ready to go for the business end of the season. And I'm hoping, heading into this game here against you guys, that City are going to be able to look fresh on the pitch and really take the game to you guys, and we can go out there and score some goals as well. I don't mean it as any disrespect, but I look at this game and I'm thinking to myself that Liverpool have got a better goal difference than us. This is a home match against a team sitting in 18th place. We need to win this game, and I'm hoping we can do so in a comfortable manner and put some pressure onto Liverpool and put some pressure onto Arsenal as well. But football just doesn't work that way. It's just not that simple and straightforward. I looked at the match at the Etihad against you guys. We had the same approach then, and you came away with a point. So most important thing, win this game, 3 points, pressure on to everybody else.
Yeah, listen, putting pressure on Liverpool sounds good to me, but all the other stuff you said sounds horrendous to me. However, a couple of players I do want to touch on, and you kind of segues onto it nicely. You know, Foden, hat-trick against Brentford, outstanding. I mean, at times for me, and I think a lot of neutrals probably feel this way, you wonder how on earth, despite the strength of your squad, he doesn't play a lot more minutes. You've obviously touched on that in terms of the rotation. Do you think he's a player that, you know, at the moment, who's maybe coming, just starting to find his peak? And, you know, a big nod to the fact that he's kept Jack Grealish for large periods of the season out the team as well.
That he's having a sensational season. I just put on my Twitter just today about Phil Foden and the season that he's having. To me, he is City's best player right now. De Bruyne and Haaland are only just coming back from injury, so I look elsewhere into the squad. We've needed somebody to really step up to the plate, and I think it's so important to remember that we don't have Ilkay Gundogan, our captain from last season. He left on a free in the summer. So we needed somebody to come into that central midfield role, somebody to be nice and versatile, can play on the right, can play on the left, can go through the centre and really help take games by the scruff of the neck. And we've needed somebody to take charge of that. And this season was always going to be that season that we needed Phil Foden to do that. And he stepped up to the plate and then some. He is, to me, the first player on the City team sheet. I think he's the best player at City right now. I think he's the best player in the Premier League right now. And I think he's the first name on the team sheet if I'm Gareth Southgate in the summer for the European Championships as well. You've got to find a way to get Phil Foden involved in that team. He is such an exciting player. And he's just that experience that he's got, I think, just helped improve his game. And he's going to go from strength to strength. And I'm so excited to see what he can do. I see him week in, week out for City. It's not easy to get into the squad. He's done that. It's not easy to stay in the squad once you're there. He's managed to do that. And what he's doing right now is sometimes we'll play him behind the striker. Pep wants him to play behind Alvarez or Haaland. Other times he wants him to go on the right wing, does a good job there. And even against Brentford, scored a hat-trick. His actual position was meant to be on left wing. And City have just been tinkering their formation a little bit to allow Joshko Gvardiol, our new signing from the summer from RB Leipzig, to give him a little bit more freedom on that left-hand side. And with him bombing up and down on the wing, allows Phil Foden to go into the centre and just pop up in them little gaps, because Haaland gets man-marked out of games. Julian Alvarez gets man-marked out of games. They're going to start man-marking De Bruyne out of games. So if you've got another player who can pop up in them spaces and most importantly put the ball in the back of the net, then it's just helps Manchester City. And that's what Phil Foden's doing. And he's really stepped up to the plate this season. So really happy with how he's playing. I'm hoping it's going to have a little ripple effect on the squad and we start seeing the very best out of some of the other players, like Jack Grealish, for example.
Well, that was obviously I touched on Jack Grealish. What are your feelings, I guess, just from a goal and assist return? He'll be disappointed this season. Is there a reason for you, having watched more of City, why he's not been playing apart from the stats, or is it simply the fact that other players have maybe been offering more to the team?
I think a lot stems down to the beginning of the season. So at the beginning of the season, we signed Jeremy Doku and signed him from France and brought him in. And it's the first time we've had an attacker that's capable of taking on a man, running past them, having that pace and precision to take the ball to the byline and put a quality ball into the box. Jack Grealish, for me, I love him to bits. I think he's a great player. He was so instrumental for City in winning the treble last season. He weren't getting them goals and assists, but he was offering so much more, including breaking down the play. So City were under pressure. He'd win a free kick. Pressure goes back onto the opposition. And it just one of them things that kind of goes unnoticed. But when you're playing in an attacking position, you need them statistics. You need them goals. You need them assists. Doku was keeping him out of the team at the beginning of the season. He gets an injury. Grealish comes in. I didn't think Grealish's form through December and January was too bad. We started to get Doku back and Pep's just started to experiment with his formation. And we're seeing more of Joshko Gvardiol going on that left-hand side for City. And whilst we've been seeing that, Jack Grealish isn't really getting a look in because he stretches the pitch rather than centralizes himself. So he's going to have to adapt. He could go into a central area. It all depends on what Pep, what Guardiola wants to utilize him with. He is one of them players, by the way, that rumors, so I'm just going to put some quotation marks there. He's one of them players that's upset about his playing time at City right now. And there was rumors circulating just before the Brentford game that apparently stormed out of training, which I don't think is the case because Pep Guardiola doesn't put up with that kind of thing. You won't be on the bench against Brentford if earlier that day stormed out of training. You'd know about it. So he just needs to knuckle down, be patient. And when he gets given that chance, because we are going to be rotating after this game because it's every 3 to 4 days that we're playing, he needs to take his opportunity, because if he doesn't, somebody else will. And that's the competition that you've got at City when it comes to being a player.
Well, before coming on to the shape and system, which you've started to touch on in terms of Gvardiol's role, etc., and how that's evolved, just one player I want to ask you about who's not at Man City anymore, but he's certainly made a huge impression on the Premier League this season. That's Cole Palmer. A little bit of insight from you guys and what you've seen from Cole Palmer before he left. And is there a degree of disappointment now of how that's panned out?
The Cole Palmer situation from our point of view was, I don't know what's happened behind the scenes. We were utilising him right at the very start of the season. He was the player that found the equaliser in the European Super Cup final for us. He was getting minutes on that right wing for City. And City were apparently towards transfer deadline day happy to loan him out. And I think that was always going to be the plan. And then something changed right at the end of the window. And I reckon speculating here, but I reckon that's word came in from Chelsea that they didn't want him on loan. They wanted him on a permanent deal. So we decided to sell him for £40 million, which at the time we was very happy with because he was quite a raw prospect. And, you know, it's going to take a bit of time to get the very best out of Cole Palmer. So we get the offer of £40 million. We'll take the £40 million. We can reinvest that into the squad at some point when we see fit. And we have got players out on the right wing and through the centre who can take up them positions. But to me, Cole Palmer, I've always seen him as our Bernardo Silva replacement. And we allowed him to sign a contract, Bernardo Silva, in the summer. And he's now got a release clause in his contract for any club outside the Premier League that he can leave City in the summer, this upcoming summer, for as little as €50 million, which is an absolute steal for Bernardo Silva. Yeah. And you take Bernardo Silva out of Manchester City's team and all of a sudden we're short in midfield and we're short out on the right wing as well. And that would have been a great to just have Cole Palmer, a good season under Pep, getting more minutes, getting more experience to say, Bernardo Silva's left. We don't need to invest anything in the squad. You're good to go. You're his ready-made replacement. And for some reason, we decided to cash in on Cole Palmer. And now he's prospering at Chelsea. And you see how good he is. And I think that's a big mistake that City have made. I'd see Bernardo Silva leaving in the summer. And I see Manchester City spending £60, £70, £80 million to replace Bernardo Silva when, if we'd been patient and kept hold of Cole Palmer, we wouldn't have had a shortage in our squad. It wouldn't have looked as thin as what it does at times, in particular when we have injuries and you've got somebody ready to take over from Bernardo Silva. But it's our loss, Chelsea's gain. He's a cracking player and I'm sure he's going to go from strength to strength with Chelsea as well.
No, fair play. And, you know, I appreciate the honesty there as well because it must be a difficult one to swallow at times. We've been there plenty of times, but particularly in your position where you are, you know, you're in a position where you don't at times need to sell, depends on who you ask, but you're not in a position where you need to sell due to pressures of, you know, again, financial pressures, but I guess that's different. So, yeah, appreciate the honesty there. Just going back then to the game at hand and the system you've described, first question I'm going to ask is how do you expect, both from a starting 11 and a system point of view, for you guys to, you know, approach the game? And secondly, if you can try your best, tell me how Everton could be successful in any way, shape or form at the weekends. If they were going to exploit any area of City, what would that be?
Yep. So firstly, with the City squad, we tend to line up with, sometimes it looks like a back four, sometimes it looks like a back three. It all depends on the situation in the game. If Everton are getting forward and you're attacking us, it'll go into a standard back four at the back. So I reckon we'll be unchanged from our match against Brentford. So that'll be Walker on the right-hand side. Gvardiol will go on the left and Ruben Diaz and Nathan Ake will occupy our centre-back role. When we're on the ball and, again, no disrespect to you guys, but I'm expecting City to be having north of 65% possession in this game. So because of that, the shape of City will change. So what you'll see is more of a back three with Kyle Walker, Ruben Diaz, and Nathan Ake as our back three. A little bit of freedom for Kyle Walker. You will see him get forward. When he goes forward, you may see Gvardiol step back. If not, Rodri will step back into that hole. So it'll always hold at least three defensive players at the back. And I think that's just to try and help snuff out any counter-attacks because we play a very high line. What will more than likely happen is Joshko Gvardiol will go right on that left wing. He'll bomb up and down and you'll see the left winger for City, which I'm expecting to be Phil Foden, drift more into the middle and he'll play alongside the striker. So I reckon it'll be Erling Haaland that starts up top for City in this game just to get him more minutes ahead of our Champions League game on Tuesday night against FC Copenhagen away. So Foden will go alongside Haaland and Alvarez will drop deeper just behind Haaland and he'll try and drop into space. What I'm expecting Everton to do is what Brentford did. You're going to have two or three players around Erling Haaland, man mark him out of that game, no space for him at all. So Alvarez will play just to try and draw a defender away to give Haaland a little bit of space. Failing that, City will look for the midfield to try and be nice and creative. That could be Bernardo out on the right, could be Kevin De Bruyne out on the right. They tend to alternate with each other. You can see Rodri sometimes get forward and chip in with the odd goal here and there. So it's all about utilising the space. And I like to see City be with a lot of urgency and moving the ball quickly because we are a little bit suspect at times. Sometimes we start a game a little bit slower. We work the ball from right to left, left to right, 2-3 passes in between. And from a neutral point of view, some people can find City quite boring to watch because of that. And it's all about City just completely dominating that game. Now, I think that's an opening for Everton. I think the way you go about this and you want to beat City, firstly, you need to keep the back door shut. You need to make sure there's no space for any of them attackers. Man Mark Haaland out the game. You give Alvarez no space around the 20-yard area. You make sure Phil Foden's not getting into them pockets. And you're going to have to rely on City moving the ball out wide to put crosses into the box. And as long as your defenders are dealing with the balls into the box, I'm not too sure how good you guys are at dealing with balls into the box. Man City, the longer the game goes on, they'll get more anxious, they'll get more desperate, and they start to just put cross after cross after cross into the area in the hope that someone will stick for 6'4" Erling Haaland on his head. If you've got us in that position, you've got us exactly where you want us. And you don't need to create that much. You don't need to do that much. You just need to make sure you keep that back door shut. And if you can do that, long balls over the top. It was Brentford's play. That first goal that they scored against us was prime example of how to play and utilize against City. You lump a ball up top into space. You look for the attacker. You try and get that attacker to take the player out the game. You look for a flick on. You look for City to make a mistake. And you need somebody who's, you need at least two up top to utilize City's attacking line. And as long as you've got somebody in that space, if you're clinical in front of goal, all you need to do is create a chance and put that ball into the back of the net, which is exactly what you guys did at the Etihad against us last season. You didn't do much. You created one chance, one opportunity, bam, into the back of the net from, what, 20, 25 yards out.
It was some
out.
Strike. That's
there you go. It was a fantastic strike. And that's all you need to do sometimes to come away from the Etihad with a point. I think this game's very much about what are Manchester City going to do to break down Everton to score them goals, because I think if we don't score two goals in this game, we're probably going to end up dropping points, because we quite simply just don't know how to keep clean sheets right now.
Well, I was going to ask you about that in terms of the defensive solidity side of it. You obviously touched on the fact that you can be vulnerable to long balls. The traditional Pep City, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, were vulnerable, not as long as that, but certainly 5 years ago, were vulnerable from set plays and corners. You talk about that back three and that back four. That doesn't sound like a back four to me that struggles against balls in the air. Is that not the case, or is it still a vulnerability to somewhat?
It all comes down to the quality of the ball into the box. A lot of teams tend to target that near post because it's been suspect once or twice, and the gaps open up every now and then in the season. They've tightened up a lot at the back. I actually think we've got better since we've signed Erling Haaland, because we've got somebody who's 6'4" that we put right in the middle of the area for a ball into the box. So you're not just dealing with two or three defenders. You've got one or two of the attackers that can help to deal with balls into the box. So corners haven't really been too much of an issue. City's bigger issue has been teams that are prepared to run at us and stretch the defence, because it can look chaotic at times, albeit they do very well, City's defence, in limiting opportunities. Teams don't tend to have more than two or three good opportunities against us. The problem that we have is, of them two or three opportunities that teams have, teams are scoring at least one goal, which means we're always needing to score at least two, and we're instantly putting ourselves under pressure. And if you used to say to me, Everton first 20 minutes, lump a ball forward, something sticks to Calvert-Lewin, he has one shot on goal and it goes into the back of the net, I'm not going to be surprised by that, because that's just how we play.
I'd be surprised, mate, because Calvert-Lewin can't hit a barn door at the moment. He hasn't scored in 17 games.
It's just our luck. Something will stick. It's just how things work with City. I know that Brentford's keeper, Flecken's been getting a bit of flack online, and quite a few comments in the build-up to that game were saying that he can't. Anytime teams are having shots on target, he's conceding. And City went in the first half, had, I think it was something crazy, 9, 10 shots on target. And it took a fluke goal right at the end to actually beat him. And he made two or three absolutely cracking saves. So I don't think form's that important when you play against Manchester City. It's just about what you do on the day against us. I think you're just as likely to go up there and score a goal against City as what City are to come out and score 3 or 4 goals. We've not really shown our clinical touch over the last few games. I can see Pep maybe having one eye on the Champions League as well. So I think if Everton stick to a strong game plan and frustrate Manchester City, it could be potentially a bit of a banana skin for us. So I'm hoping that we can just turn up, take the game to you, and more importantly, score that opening goal just to settle everybody down, because title races, the hard work, they're not great for the blood pressure. But equally, you guys down at the bottom, it's not great. I've been there and done that. I was supporting City back in 2003, 2004, where you're just needing to keep grinding and you just need two or three wins in a row and all of a sudden you're well clear of the relegation zone. I think for me, I had a quick look doing my preview today. Everton have got a game against Palace next up, haven't you, at home against Goodison Park. That, to me, is a huge game. I don't see Palace taking anything this weekend from Chelsea. You can drag Palace into that race at the bottom. You can drag the likes of Forest, even Fulham, if they have a bad result this weekend. You can just start to drag other teams into it, but you're needing wins and you're needing points. You're fighting for everything, as is everybody else as well. So every game's important, both at the bottom and at the top as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. As I'm quick to remind everyone who does come on the show, we would be 12th in the league had the Premier League not stepped in and deducted us 10 points. Yeah. So the table can be somewhat deceiving in that respect. But yeah, you're right. We are right in the thick of it. And that game, no two ways about it, that game against Palace next week is huge and significantly bigger than this in the context of the relegation fight. But listen, Jay, thanks so much. Last question before we go, obviously.
No problem.
I don't know where you're going to go with this, because we started off talking about maybe getting 3, 4, 5 goals against us and betting that goal difference better. You've then spoke about how it could be a banana skin. So I'm gonna allow you to give us your prediction.
I'm going to go somewhere in between what I've been speaking about. I think City will win the game. I'm going for a 3-0 victory for City, more so in hope than expectation. I feel like we need a clean sheet. We need something defensively positive to take into that game in midweek at Copenhagen, because they attack teams. They are all guns blazing. That will be a difficult game for City. I think we'll have one eye on that. I think City will probably approach this game to try and kill this off as quickly as possible. But I can see Everton being very stubborn and City taking the time in scoring an opening goal. I'm hoping that'll stretch the pitch a little bit, open Everton up, and City can capitalise upon that and find the back of the net. So going for a 3-0 victory for City, but I won't rule out this being a very close 1-0 or a 2-1 or something. I see City winning the game, though. I'm confident of that.
I hope rather than expectation for me as well that we might be able to get a draw, and that would be a huge morale boost and point if we were able to. But again, back to your point, which you made so well, I think there's priorities elsewhere on other fixtures that we think we may be able to have a realistic chance of getting points from, and they certainly go beyond this game. But nonetheless, Jay, thanks so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate the insight. Fascinating, particularly the discussion around the system. I mean this more than I mean it with any other team in the league. Best of luck for the rest of the season beyond this this weekend. God forbid if you don't manage to win the league, because it means that there might be a chance that the other lot over the park have a chance of doing that.
It's an interesting one. We've been here before with Liverpool. We've come out on top a couple of times on title races. So I'm confident we can do it again. Unfortunately for you guys, it just means that we've got to go through you to make that goal achievable.
Hey, listen, mate, we're here. We're here for you anytime. if it means we can stay up.
Well, that's the ideal situation, isn't it? You stay up, we win the league, everything's good.
Well, that's everything's okay. Yeah, the parity remains. But listen, again, thanks, Jay. Really appreciate it. For any of the Blues watching who are interested in following City in particular, to obviously make sure that they keep that title away from the Reds across the park, and please give Jay a follow on Twitter. It's JSGC171. It's correct, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's exactly the same. You'll see the tag in our description as well. If you want to follow the YouTube channel, please do. Some superb City content on there, especially the next time they beat City. We can go and watch the podcast after it and enjoy it along with them. Well, yeah, top man, Jay. Enjoy your weekend.
Cheers, mate. You too.
See you soon.